Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. Israel's responded to President Trump's Gaza peace plan after Hamas said it would accept some conditions, including release of all remaining hostages, if Israel withdraws from Gaza and what it calls proper field conditions are met. Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu's office saying Israel is preparing for immediate implementation of the first stage of President Trump's plan for the immediate release of all the hostages. Moshe Lavi is the brother-in-law of a hostage, Omri Miran.
It's been a very interesting evening, to say the least. We're trying to comprehend what is going on behind the scenes.
Federal judge in New York City sentenced Sean Diddy Combs to 4 years and 2 months in prison and a $500,000 fine on a prostitution charge's conviction. His lawyers say they will appeal. A partisan impasse in the Senate over Affordable Care Act tax credits and Medicaid cuts, preventing a quick end to the government shutdown. This is ABC News.
Start your day with me, Pam Yonke, every morning with the Midwest Farm Report, right here on 107.5 WLAK.
It's the Cubs and the Brewers. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports, baseball. The Brewers will face the Chicago Cubs tomorrow in Milwaukee for Game 1 of the divisional playoffs. Last night, the Cubs eliminated the Padres 3-1 at Wrigley Field. Cubs manager Craig Counsell on having to play his former team, the Brewers, at American Family Field.
Well, they're going to be fired up. They've had the best team in baseball this year. They feel like they have a chance to play in the World Series with this team. So they're rested. It's going to be a great atmosphere.
First pitch tomorrow in Milwaukee at 1:08 p.m. College basketball, former Badgers player Brad Davison has been hired as an assistant coach for the men's basketball team. The 26-year-old has played in the European League the past 4 years. Badgers head coach Greg Gard.
I felt somebody with his background, his youthfulness was important, his experience, and I felt that's what would help our staff.
That's Greg Gard with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Timeout.
Remember, we're a team that plays together. Listen, the winning will take care of itself. We just have to get everyone involved.
In interscholastic sports, we celebrate what makes every one of us unique. And in the pursuit of a common goal, everyone in the huddle, in the bleachers, and in the community comes together. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to. Lots to talk about. So something going on in D.C., a little something happening. Some doors are closed, maybe. Gonna fire, what, 750,000 federal workers have been furloughed? People who are in essential positions that help we the people get what we need. You know, I was looking at some of the numbers. Wage and hour division only has 17 of the 1,270 employees still. So that means only 17 people ensuring that you don't get ripped off from your employer. Whenever employers cheat someone, and they do a lot, somebody sometimes helps. 17 for the whole country? 17 for the whole country. Occupational safety and health, only 179 of the meager 1,664 still on the job. That means I hope you're feeling a lot safer at work. And for my mine worker friends, MSHA, the Mine Safety and Health Administration, they've only got 674 of the almost 1,600 to ensure that one of the most dangerous jobs in the country has a little bit of oversight. The Employee Benefits Security Administration, you know, the ones who oversee retirement plans and health plans that serve millions of us, 46 of 668. Bureau of Labor Statistics, most of them are gone. The Veterans Employment and Training Service, because we love veterans, right? Right up there at the top, pedestal stuff, only 3 of 193 still on the job. So again, I guess not essential workers, not something that we really seem to, I don't know, care much about. Throw that on top of the fact that the Trump administration has frozen some $26 billion in federal funds that are targeted to do things that budgets that have already passed. And where is the funding cuts? Where's the funding freezes coming from? Well, Democratic states, because this is their opportunity. Their opportunity to, you know, make them pay. $8 billion for climate initiatives, $18 billion for infrastructure programs in New York City. Yeah, priorities, my friend. But you keep going on. We're gutting all of the employment of people who process visas or monitor diseases or approve drugs, scientific research funding, public services like national parks, all cut off. And I love how the framing is it's, you know, we're in this because Democrats want healthcare subsidies, which is an interesting way, again, to frame it when it's the frame that I look at is Republicans want to take healthcare away from people. Republicans want people to die. That's basically what this is. Call it what it is. If you take healthcare from people, it is what it is. They're saying up to $400 million a day in lost wages. So that's gonna hurt the economy a little bit. And how does Mike Lee, the senator from Utah, see it? Well, he was on Fox News, tickled that you have Budget Director Russ Voigt, who, according to Mike Lee, has been dreaming about this moment, preparing for this moment since puberty. Yeah. And again, I like the way he framed that because it's true. For them, this is a lot of what teenage boys do alone in their rooms once they discover themselves. This is a lot of that coming from Republicans. And understand, not alone. Because when I saw that, it got me thinking about Paul Ryan. Do you remember Paul Ryan? You know, the guy who instead of you know, going and doing keg stands at parties, was fantasizing about ways to destroy Social Security. Oddly enough, a benefit he himself, like me, had collected, got him through college. Unfortunately, my family wasn't smart enough to realize that that's how the program could work, that I could get that money to go to college. They didn't know. Because you gotta know how the system works. But he was able to use the Social Security survival benefits to, you know, pay for his college tuition. Yeah. And then wanted to slam the door behind him. When my mother passed, we got a meager couple hundred bucks a month, but it was enough for my grandparents to be able to put food on the table because I ate a lot as a kid. My grandparents couldn't have afforded it otherwise. So that benefit should be, in my view, expanded, not destroyed. And look, Paul Ryan was one of the guys who was, you know, instead of, again, like I said, doing keg stands and going to parties and, you know, dating, was fantasizing about destroying Social Security, raising retirement ages, reducing benefits for future retirees, all in the name of, we're going to save it. Privatization is not the savior of Social Security. It's the destruction. Because Social Security isn't a retirement program. It's an anti-poverty program. And it's amazingly, amazingly successful. Because we took seniors from being mostly in poverty to being rarely in poverty. That is what a good government program does. And we've got these folks who, well, they don't believe in good government. And it got me thinking, you know, again, why do these people get into government? You know, some will say, well, limited government, free markets, reduced regulations, it's gonna be my freedom. Some are the traditional values crowd, you know, religion, gun rights, abortion. Some are the law and order types. You know, usually the macho guys who got beat up as children. And then there's the Paul Ryans, the ambitious, you know, seeking power or money or higher office. And then there's some who are just, let's just say, insufferable, unbearable, intolerable. And well, a whole bunch of things that if I said the FCC would probably, no, they would throw me off the air. let's just say these are people who don't have your wants, your needs, your hopes, your dreams, anything at heart. For them, it's about punishing. And what we're witnessing out of our Republican friends right now is a whole lot of, we got a chance. From puberty, votes been fantasizing about this. And now he's got his hands all over it. And he's doing exactly what you know he's doing. Gonna take a quick break. Right back. Stick around.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So it's crazy that we're still here. Sad reality is Republicans wanted this. I know the New York Times is saying, you know, do you blame Democrats for wanting something? You go, really? This is how we're going to play this? Because everyone I've talked to says, well, you know, the Democrats want to give health care to illegals. No, not even close. But the reality is a lot of bad stuff's happening. People, friends who've wanted to go to national parks, it's on their vacation pack. Who knows? And who knows what it's going to mean for these workers who clearly the Trump administration doesn't seem to think as useful or essential. Remember that word. That's why I've asked Mark Cochran to come share some thoughts with us. He's the president of AFGE Local 315045 and president of AFGE Council 270. He works within the National Park Service in our national parks. Mark, thanks for taking time for us.
I appreciate you having me and a chance to share the stories that we're facing every day.
So where are we right now? I've seen stories that all of the agencies across the government are putting out messages that this is all the Democrats' fault, that emails are being sent back with, hey, I'm not at work today because of those damn Democrats. Are you hearing any of that?
In a way, it's a mixed bag in the Park Service. So the Park Service is taking pride in the fact that we're a totally nonpartisan agency. Our mission and the mission of the employees that work there is to preserve, protect, and conserve our country's natural, historical, and cultural resources for the next generation of Americans, and also for the foreign visitors. We get a lot of tourists from overseas that come to visit our historical sites and our natural sites that has meant so much for our country's history throughout its time. So I did get the email in my email box, my Park Service email, about how the evil Democrats caused this and wanted this. But on the Park Service site of where I work, it's managed by DOI, so we have limited control over what goes on that right on the website. There's nothing saying, like other agencies like HUD, you know, Forest Service, VA, there's nothing on that website that says it's the evil Democrats that caused this.
And, you know, the thing that gets me is, you know, we during the pandemic, we heard all about essential workers and frontline heroes and all of this stuff. And your guys were part of that. Mm-hmm. You know, in this moment, this seems like an opportunity to assault all those people who we called essential and frontline heroes and the people that we were, you know, we need more people like you. It seems like this is an opportunity for Russ Vogt and Trump to, you know, every wet dream they've ever had, this seems like their opportunity.
Yeah, it's crazy. It just blows my mind that they take every opportunity to get their, you know, their pet project line through at the expense of hardworking Americans. I mean, the folks that I work with, we're middle class. You know, we're working paycheck to paycheck like most everybody else. It really gets me when I see things and people quote that trite line that says, oh, the average salary of the federal worker is, you know, six figures. Well, I don't make nearly that. I mean, because the Park Service is traditionally one of the most chronically underfunded and understaffed agencies in the federal service. So we've been doing a lot more with a lot less for decades. And it's just I don't know. It just drives me crazy where, you know, myself and my colleagues, we have to work three or four jobs at a daily basis just to do the bare minimum to preserve our resources to the levels that the public deserves. And yet, you know, our elected representatives who have one job, and, you know, it's, you know, there's no surprise that the budget has to be passed and they still can't get it right. So it's just blows my mind.
Yeah, you got one job. How hard is that? Do that.
Right.
But as you've pointed out, look, I know a couple of people who work in the Park Service, and these are people who they just love what they do. And, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, if I'm in your shoes, I got to feel really abused. I got to feel real anger. And the fact, especially with the fact that, you know, I didn't sign up to be the pawn in this political chess match. None of us did, because these guys can't seem to find their way in the dark. Why should you, and why should we as the public have to suffer because of that? And then we hear the game of, you know, Thune saying, well, I don't know how Schumer's getting out of this. Like, it's some kind of game. That's what's infuriating to me.
Yeah, just being able to compromise is just a basic duty of being an adult. And if you can't figure that out, then why are you why are you a politician in the first place? It's crazy. And that's part of what makes the Park Service such a great place to work. You know, where I work, we're a big family. I mean, we support each other. We've been working together for years, and even like the Park Service is a pretty small agency. Once you've been working there for 2-3 years, you either know everybody or you know somebody who knows somebody else. Yeah. And like I said, we're pretty underpaid for what we do. Nobody's making a fortune working in the Park Service, and we do it because even the people who aren't history nerds like me, they believe in the mission of the Park Service, and they believe in doing the best job that they can as long as they're there.
Yeah. And the sad reality, Mark, is usually the only time I get folks like you to come on to talk about what you do, and I think what you do is so important, is when in these moments when it's about ready to be taken away. So do you think these shutdowns have any useful? I know all the damage they're doing, and we've already talked about that, but, you know, do you think there's some useful part of this where you go, finally, people are going, oh, that's what government does. You know, that's why, you know, we have this incredible Park Service because of these people who aren't there and they're now closed and I don't get to access them. Do you think there's any of that that could be messaging wise out of this useful?
I think it does help. I mean, I know for sure that I've definitely received a lot more appreciation from the visitors this past year than I have in quite a while. But, you know, honestly, we're not in it for the praise, the adulation. If people never knew that I existed, I would be perfectly happy, because that means I'm doing my job, because I'm keeping up the park where I work as it should be. And so people should be looking at the park, but they shouldn't be looking at me. So,
So let's get into the nitty gritty of this, because, you know, the sad reality is this administration has been horrible for your union, for federal workers, from top to bottom. And look, to be honest, to their credit, and I'll give Trump credit for this, said he was going to do it, knew it was going to happen. They ran a campaign on retribution. To know unions were going to be at the front of this. They, you know, Project 2025 was right there front and center, even though. Yeah, they tried to distance themselves. Let's start with, is this what you expected? All of these attacks that your union, your members, your profession, are you, is this what you expected?
I mean, I knew it was going to be challenging. I knew it was going to be bad. I didn't expect them to start as quickly as they did, as hard as they did. Because, I mean, for us, it didn't just start on the St. Valentine's Day massacre, where they fired all the illegal, I might add, they fired all the probationary employees for, you know, BS reasons. It started at the end of January when they told all of our seasonal employees that, well, oh, those your seasonal offer letters that you just received, you know, they're null and void. So just sit at home because you're not coming back to work for the season, which is extremely challenging for us because at a lot of parks, you know, anywhere from 50 to 75% of their the staffing are seasonal employees. So we rely on those people to be able to accomplish our mission. And I mean, it's just a telltale sign of how loyal the park staff are that most of the vast majority of our seasonal employees come back year after year. So it's super easy on us because there's minimal training. You know, they show up when their season starts. They know where all the tools are, all the equipment are that they need to accomplish their jobs, and they get right to it.
Yeah.
So
let me ask you this, because, you know, Trump has taken this as an opportunity. As I said a moment ago, this is their chance to live out every wet dream fantasy that they dreamt up while sitting in their ivory tower think tanks. You know, the talk of firing, you know, permanently firing, you know, tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of your members. Do you see this in that light? And if that's the case, how do we get that message that this isn't about a budget? This isn't about funding. This is about using raw power to abuse people that they view as their political enemies, workers.
Well, yeah. So that has to come from, you know, the citizens, the voters. They need to contact their representatives and say, hey, you know, this is not what we put you in office for. Because you're right, it's been crazy. Because for our staffing levels, we've been chronically understaffed. And as a result of the early separations, early retirements, and people just bailing out from the Park Service to either work in the private sector or work for other agencies where they can make more money and have less responsibilities. You know, hey, I can only do... You mean I only have to work one job? I mean, that's like, you know, heaven to me. You know, they've left. We're down 25% of our already critically low staffing levels. And with, you know, this administration stripping away the representation rights from other agencies, you know, the mass firings they've already had, I mean, especially the VA. I mean, thankfully, the, you know, AFGE has really gone to bat with, you know, lawsuits and grievances and taking it to, you know, rallies and just getting people to stand up for, you know, our rights and their rights. Cause we work for the taxpayers. You know, it's not us. We're doing it for, you know, everybody. And the fact that we've been able to decrease the amount of rifts that have happened already. I mean, that it's a positive sign, you know, like, especially for the VA, they said they were going to lay off 80,000 people. They wound up only laying off, you know, what, 20,000 or 30,000, which,
yeah, only 20,000 or 30,000.
Don't get me wrong, it's horrible. I mean, it's a horrible number, and those folks didn't deserve to lose their jobs the way they did, but it's a heck of a lot better than what they, you know, what they wanted to do.
So when you look at all of this, because, you know, this is a lot of bad, and this is, again, Trump. As I've been saying, we're going to watch Trump overreach in massive ways to do all the things that the votes of the world and the heritage foundations of the world want them to do, to shrink government, the Grover Norquist, pull them into, you know, I want government small enough I can drown it in a bathtub types.
Right.
This is an opportunity for us to see who they are, because they've already told us who they are. Now they're showing us. This is an opportunity maybe to organize around. This is bad for working people. This is bad for democracy. This is bad for the country.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, they're taking away our rights, you know, right in front of our faces. And for whatever reason, there's a small but vocal section of our country that are all for it. And it just blows my mind. And especially since a lot of what they're saying are just blatant lies. 'Cause so a few superintendents ago, the park where I work, the superintendent at the time was really trying to get rid of all the seasonals. He's like, well, they're just a waste of money. You know, we can outsource it cheaper, you know, blah, blah, blah. So he put out all kinds of bids for the work that some of our seasonals were doing in the landscape preservation branch where I'm working now. And all of the bids that he got back, even from one of the largest landscaping companies in the country, was the cheapest bid that he received from those folks was three times the amount of what we were getting paid.
Wow.
And that doesn't even cover all of the extra things that we do. Like, you know, since we're so shorthanded, a lot of the work our maintenance staff does is typically handled by interp rangers and LEs at other parks, because we're out there at the park way more often than they get around, because they're way more short staffed than we are. So when we're working, we're answering questions for people. We're giving folks directions. You know, if somebody's going the wrong way on a one-way road, we're stopping them and say, hey, like, if it's safe, we'll turn them around. If not, we'll give them directions where they can exit the road safely. You know, making sure people walk, you know, they're staying on the hiking trails and they're not walking off trail and, you know, impacting negatively our, you know, natural resources. You know, we're doing all that every day. Yeah. And you're not going to get that kind of work out of a contract crew that is just shows up just to cut the grass and then they're going to, you know, go home and or go on their next job or whatever.
Now, you hit on something that I was going to ask here in a second, because I see I see this moment for Republicans as an opportunity to, again, to do all the things they've been dreaming about doing, which is crushing government and selling it off for pennies. So do you fear that there's a privatization scheme somewhere under? Now, I understand the National Park Service on the grand scheme of their Project 2025 plans was not at the top, but it's still there. That's still property that our government owns in our name that could be handed off to a billionaire. Is that something that you're concerned with?
I'm very concerned with it, because this is just not only just a continuation, but an expansion of the attack on the working and middle class in this country that started in the Nixon administration. You know, when his the Secretary of Ag said, oh, the answer to the farmers is either get big or get out. You know, their whole answer is to move the money upward to the third corporate executive donor class. So, you know, and the way they do that is by making our lives miserable and making us appear to be unnecessary, so then they can get their contract, you know, laborers in there to do it cheaper,
or not even cheaper, just more profitably.
Right.
Because, you know, I remember this is one of those weird things just popped into my head, because back in 2011, when the Wisconsin uprising was going on, we were one of the first programs in there. We're the first program to broadcast out of the Capitol during the occupation. And I had gone out to get the oil changed in my car and met a guy who had was working for the state, who his job was being outsourced because it was part of Walker's plan. He ended up working for a firm that was doing that job at twice the salary. So he said, look, I'm going to collect my pension. I got a great pension, and I'm going to go work for the company doing the exact same job for twice the money, because it wasn't about efficiency. It wasn't about cost savings. It was simply about the ideology of nothing should be done by we the people. It should all be done for a profit and in private hands. And, you know, efficiency be damned and the good be damned. And that's what's really frustrating with me about the Park Service.
Right. Yeah. If Teddy Roosevelt were here right now to see what's happening to his Park Service, he would start punching people. And it just breaks my heart to see what this administration is doing to the people who have dedicated their lives to public service and working for.
Yeah, he'd be rough riding all the
citizens.
He'd be rough riding over the whole lot of them. Let me ask last question I've got for you, because look, you know, the longer this goes on, the more painful it's going to be. The longer it goes on, the harder it's going to be for you guys to go back to work and catch up. What's the message coming out of this?
Just make your voices heard. You know, call your representatives, let them know that this government shutdown isn't about, you know, government efficiency. It's about making, you know, hardworking Americans feel pain for no other reason other than their political grandstanding. So, you know, continue taking actions to the street, continue protesting, you know, keep the calls up on your representatives, because that does make a difference. The louder we are and the longer we're louder, the more they have to pay attention.
I'm with you, Mark. I appreciate you taking time for us. Keep up the great work. I'd love to talk to you again real soon.
Yeah, anytime. I appreciate you giving me the chance to get our story out there.
Good stuff. Appreciate it, Mark. Mark Cochran, president of AFGE Local 3145. He's also the president of Council 270 AFGE. AFGE.org, the website. I want to hear your thoughts. Do you think hocking off the Park Service is a good idea at some point? I know they're thinking about it. I want to hear it. Rick at the RickSmithShow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Matt and Air on Air.
You're listening to 107.5 WLAK, Amory's home for Matt and Air on Air, weekdays from 9 to 11 a.m.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly clear tonight and warm with a low in the mid-60s. Sunny and hot for tomorrow, breezy too, and a high in the upper 80s. Windy Sunday, sunny in the morning, some clouds in the afternoon. Slight rain chance, high low 80s. Much cooler next week. Currently at 72 degrees.
Matt and Air on Air.
We are delighted to be joined by the executive director of the Wisconsin State Cranberry Growers Association. Grant Holly is here.
We account for about 67% of the country's cranberries. And then Wisconsin itself, because the cranberry originated here, makes a product that is really good for the environment. And as we're finding out more and more, it's really good for you. Boy, I sound like a commercial.
Matt and Air on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So when you went to work today, did you expect to get paid? You know, for all of my friends who were pointing their fingers at the federal workers and go, oh, they deserve what they get. Did you get paid today? Are you expecting it in your paycheck this weekend? Sadly, the people who work for our federal government, they got to show up to work today. They're going to have to show up to work tomorrow. And they don't know if they're going to get paid or when they're going to get paid. That's a problem. And this is why using workers as pawns in a political game is a bad idea. And here to share some thoughts on just how bad this is, I've asked Dave Demas to come talk with us. Dave is the president of AFGE Local 3003. If you want to check out their work, afge.org, the website. Dave, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me again. Appreciate
you. So let's start right there. The reality is your members got to show up. You represent workers in the Bureau of Prisons. Corrections officers have to show up because inmates, they don't get a weekend off. They don't get to go home because there's a shutdown. What's the sentiment? What are you hearing?
Well, it's also 7 days that since our contract was terminated as well. So it's kind of, stress is high, morale is low. We're on day two of a shutdown, so we don't have any bargaining rights, and now we don't have a paycheck as we speak. So it's an interesting time, because most times it's like, okay, well, you know, we'll get through this. We'll get through this. But now it's getting a little interesting inside the institution. The stuff that we had in place is slowly starting to unravel, you know, and
so,
we're just.
So let's start with the first part of it that you brought up, the contract, because this is now starting to come home to roost that we don't have a contract in place. We have nothing, no written protections. We've got to take someone's word for it. And I got to be honest, I keep asking about this administration. If Trump's word is more worthless or something that he's signed, because I don't know what are you experiencing on the contract front, you know, separate from them using the shutdown to go after more stuff. What is that experience?
It's not fun. You're sitting there and used to have a voice for your people, and now you're trying to navigate just the day. People are still calling. They're still asking a lot of questions. Members are scared. They don't know, you know, if we're going to get annual leave, if we're going to get AWOL status, if you try to take a day off, the rules are being, there's no rules. There's actually no rules right now inside the Bureau of Prisons. And it's getting a little interesting. All these MOUs and all these agreements that we've had locally, they're starting to just disappear. They're changing things very, very quickly. It's for how long we had these agreements in place. And when the director got rid of our contract, I didn't think it would unravel this quick, but
it sounds like chaos. It sounds not even planned chaos. It just sounds like chaos.
Yeah. I just feel like stuff is just getting sent down from DC and saying, try this, do this, do this, do this. And us as a bargaining unit and even the non-bargaining staff, they're like, that's not right.
No, and look, this is a great organizing opportunity, you know, for down the road, but that's down the road. It's getting through today and tomorrow that's the hard part, especially because you guys are really in a spot because you're in really dangerous jobs. I mean, this isn't, you know, I just talked with, you know, Mark from the Park Service. There's one thing about working in the parks. There's danger there, but not the kind of imminent danger that your members deal with each and every day.
Yeah, we're law enforcement agency. We're law enforcement officers. We're just trying to get, we want the government and the administration to understand that we're just another law enforcement agency looking to be treated as the rest of them, like ICE and CBP and, you know, Marshals. All those guys they got exempt from all these executive orders.
What?
Yeah.
Hold on, walk me through that, because as I understand how your members are, you know, it's like my Teamster brothers and sisters. There are law enforcement people and they're big Republican Trump supporters. You know, when bad things happen, it doesn't happen to them. This has got to be a wake-up call.
Yeah, it is. And like I mentioned to you in the previous show, it's pretty much like 65-35 Republican and Democrat in that area of Pennsylvania. So it's like he's like thumbing her nose saying like, yeah, thanks for your vote, but you know, you're no good to me anymore.
And I would argue it goes back to what we've talked about many times before. They just don't care about working people regardless of who you vote for, but especially if you didn't vote for them, there's that, but they don't seem to really care one way or the other, I think.
Yeah, and that you know, it's a good segue back to the shutdown. Like, we should just probably get them to sit down and I think that we should get the CR and get it in place for now, and let the government run. If they're saying, if the Republicans are saying that they're going to bargain in good faith, let them sit down and bargain. I don't know if they're going to, but you got to take their word for it at this point.
No, hold on. This is the caveat. And this is where I'm struggling, and I go back to which is more worthless, Trump's signature or his word, because I don't know in this moment, if you're not going to write something down, if we're not going to do it in the view of the public, I don't know that you can trust any of the stuff coming out of this negotiation, which is why our government is so badly broken, because you've got Trump who's saying, I'll change it if I want to. Look at what he's done with funding that's already been allocated by Congress, and Congress is doing nothing to stop him.
Yeah, and it's a shame. You know, the three co-equal branches of the government should be all working to keep everybody in check, but it just seems like it's just one way right now.
So where do you see this going? Because, you know, clearly your members are stuck, working people are stuck in a spot. I said a number of times, it's the people who got to go up and keep our government running, actually working, who are the ones who are being used as pawns in all of this. Do you see this as I do, that, you know, Trump's going to use this as an opportunity to go, you know, grind some axes and go after, you know, certain agencies and gut? I don't think the Bureau of Prisons are going to see employment loss. I think a lot of bad changes. How do you see it?
Well, I don't want to say selfishly, but selfishly, I kind of just want to get my paycheck at this point. And I want to see them sit down and at least try to negotiate what the Democrats want to sit down and talk about. If it's the healthcare subsidizations or whatever they're called, subsidies, excuse me, then do it. Then sit down and see what they can do. He always has that pocket rescission. He can do the rescissions of funds and stuff, but I don't think it's a good look for either side right now. Having the government shut down and lapsing funding, Congress has an under 30% approval rating for like years now, for many years.
And like part of that is the fact that they don't care. They're in their camps and in their silos. And I'm going to put the blame on Republicans a little more. Because, you know, I don't know how you take health care from people and to give billionaires tax cuts. I don't know how you do that. And not even to be willing to talk about those issues. I'm struggling in this moment because I don't want to shut down either. I want things to work. Sadly, we've got an administration, in my view, that doesn't. And I think they see this as potentially an opportunity, as I've said before, to do all the things that they've dreamt up in their think tanks to do.
Like you mentioned before, we're the ones that are going to take the brunt of this. I'm sure my health insurance is going to go up. I'm sure everything's going to go up. So I'm just kind of just sitting back and just waiting for the next bill.
I'm right there with you. So how do we change this narrative? How do we change this because now it's about Democrats, it's about Republicans, it's about red, it's about blue, it's about, oh, it's your fault, not mine. And even I've gone in a little bit in that direction. How do we take this and go, you're both screwing things up. A lot of you need to go. We need working class voices in there. We need Dave Demas's in there. We need people in there who are going to go, hey, our job is to do the will of the people, to make sure that people get health care, that people get help and assistance where they need it, to make sure we've got infrastructure and all kinds of stuff, not to use funding as a political tool to enact retribution and revenge.
Yeah, that's the worst part about it is, you know, there's got to be a way. What's right is right. You should be able to sit down and say, okay, so we're going to talk about health insurance. Where could we get... where can we get to yes? Not no, 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 no. How can we get to yes? How could we figure this out that everybody's not covered, but the taxes aren't going up. There's got to be a way. And we just keep burying our country with more and more debt. And it's just not working. Whatever they're doing now isn't working.
No, I'm with you. But here's where my problem is I don't blame the politicians anymore. I blame us because we voted for these clowns. We put these people into office with their ideological inflexibilities. I've had Republican politicians tell me that they don't want health care for people. They don't want government subsidized any of this stuff. That's a problem. How do you compromise? How do you negotiate with people who basically want to cut your legs off?
If I knew that answer, I wouldn't be sitting here.
And that's how we get into sadly, Dave, this is how we get where we are. And this is where as you can tell, where my frustration is, because I don't want your members to be out there working without being paid or not. I don't want them without contracts. I don't want them in dangerous situations without a voice into how they're going to be able to operate, to function, to be protected. This is all bad. Every bit of it is bad.
I agree. And you know, just to go back to the contract being terminated, it wasn't a good day. So Thursday, the contract was terminated. They literally told us, pack up your office, carry it out, get rid of it. You're done. We're changing the locks. We're taking all your rights away from you. Our VP said he felt like a bum when he carried out the last box from the union office. Like they were telling him, take your stuff, and it's either you're going to take it or we're going to put it on the street. So it's like that's how crazy it went. It went from being, oh yeah, we're status quo, we're gonna work together, and then all of a sudden they're booting us out on our rear ends.
So. Yeah, but during the campaign, I was talking about the fact that they want to run government like a business. What you just described is running government like a business. The kind of lack of respect, the lack of dignity, all of that. And I don't see it getting any better until the next election. I'm curious, do you see a way back from what we're seeing, or do you expect it to get worse as they realize that there are no guardrails, there are no safety nets for workers. Do you expect it to get worse for your members?
Only time will tell, but if at this rate, how it's going now, I don't see it getting any better. I think, you know, a midterm election's a pretty far away. You know, will the House flip? Will they get more seats in the Senate? There's got to be. I always like the balanced government. Like, you can't just have all. You can't have both the Senate, the House, and the presidency. It's just a bad look. And it never works for either side. It's right. It's always a fight. It's all partisan stuff.
You know, any extreme. And my problem again is in a lot of this is extremism. When you take extreme positions, you dig into extreme camps, you've got problems. But in this situation, and this is where I'm probably going to be a little different than you, I don't blame the Democrats for being backed into a corner that Republicans wanted them in. Because I believe they wanted this shut down so they could do all of the things that they are doing. Because it's amazing just how fast they are moving, which tells me anyway, and I don't know what it says to you. It tells me that they were enormously ready for this moment. And I think they wanted it. And Schumer gave it to them. And Democrats gave it to them because they wanted to take a stand as well. So we're kind of in that standoff position, aren't we?
Yeah. I want to see some fight on the Democrats a little bit more. I get that.
Yeah.
It's just right now it's just so toxic. You want to see them fight. You want to see them sit down. I'm kind of talking on the both sides of my mouth, but it's like whatever they're doing now, it's so far it's polarized so far, and nothing's getting done. Yeah. We need better. We need better for not even for my members, but for the American people.
See, there's the response right there. We need better. That should be the campaign slogan. We need better. We deserve better. As a country, we should have better. As the wealthiest country in the history of humanity, we should have healthcare for people. We should have, you know, homes for people. We should be able to take care of our brothers and sisters. And instead of, well, what we've got, which is some weird kind of not even you know, brother sister infighting. This is Hatfield and McCoy kind of stuff, and it ain't good. Last line I got for you. What's the message that you want folks to hear? And what's the response here, Dave?
You gotta call your representatives. You gotta let them know that not only do we need to, you know, get the government open, but you should also let them know that union contracts are a big deal. It's a big deal in my house. It's a big deal in my family. It's safeguards for the correctional officers and the other correctional staff in the inside these institutions. We need you to call Congress, and we need you to tell them that Council of Prison Locals needs to be reinstated as the sole representative of the Bureau of Prisons.
There you go. I hope so, because look, you're unfortunately in no other profession in the government like yours. Your members' lives are at stake here, and nobody, not me, not anyone I know, wants to see any harm come to your members. So make those calls. Dave Devemus, I appreciate you taking time for us. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Do you think this is Trump's chance to overreach? Do you think Schumer's doing the right thing? I want to hear it. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1967. That was the day that the Dust Bowl troubadour, Woody Guthrie, died. Over the course of his life, Woody Guthrie wrote almost 3,000 songs. He was one of the thousands of people who took to the road during the Great Depression, swept into wandering by the winds that churned the Dust Bowl. In an interview with NPR, fellow folk music legend Pete Seeger described Guthrie's influence, saying, quote, "We all read about music being part of people's lives, but I hadn't seen it in action until I met him. The words that came out of his mouth and the music he made all flowed together with the life that he led, and I was greatly attracted to it and kind of tagged along with him for several months. Woody showed me how to hitchhike and how to ride the freight trains, how to sing in saloons. A 2013 article in Paste magazine summarized Guthrie's legacy, writing, "No artist has ever expressed a deeper will to fight against oppression and the rights of the little guy than Woody Guthrie." Iconic author John Steinbeck wrote this vivid description of Guthrie, harsh-voiced and nasal, his guitar hanging like a tire on a rusty rim. "There is nothing sweet about Woody, and there is nothing sweet about the songs he sings. But there is something more important for those who will listen. There is the will of a people to endure and fight against oppression. I think we call this the American spirit."
This land is your land, and this land is my land. From California to the New York Island, and the Redwood Forest, and the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me.
Labor History in 2, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and the Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So I wanted to get to a couple of emails before... Because I've been saying, hey, you know, send me an email. I want to know what you think. And I'm grateful to everyone. Have been swamped with folks throwing their two cents in. And thank you. So I just wanted to grab a couple of them. Maria points out that I use the word illegal when talking about what the Republicans want to do with healthcare and blaming the shutdown on illegals. And it's what they're saying. Took me to task. That I've used a hateful term, that I should use non-citizen and immigrant, which I generally do. I usually use undocumented or immigrant or any of those. But in this case, when you're talking about what they're saying, you got to point it out. They are using that language, and it should infuriate you. It should make you angry. And as Maria points out, both of my guests on the show that she watched, pointed out that we should have health care for everyone, citizens, non-citizens alike, everybody. Because to use two of the favorite analogies, she used the smoking section analogy and the peeing in the pool section analogy, which are both useful, both correct. I think if you have a system of where people don't get care, you've got real problems. So thank you, Maria. Bill, he chimes in, says that we are watching the bank being robbed and fighting over what station the getaway car was playing. And it's a great, great point. We're fighting over all this other stuff when the reality is, bottom line, Republicans are literally taking food out of the mouths of children and healthcare away from sick people so that rich people can have more and Donald can have more control. I'm right there with you, Bill. Sarah writes 15 times, I counted, "Citizens United" in all caps. Also wanted me to know that the AFL-CIO put in an amicus brief siding with Citizens United. And then she asks what I think about the name and how successful Citizens United has been at dividing us and what I thought of the results. And you go, yeah, this is what Republicans do masterfully. Give them credit. They've got linguistic geniuses in their ivory towers dreaming up Citizens United, death tax. They've got the message machine down, simplistic, easy to regurgitate, and generally upside down. And this is just another one of those. Are we surprised that Citizens United divided us? No, not even a little bit. Lucy wrote, "The powerful in this country never cared about healthcare except theirs." She writes, "Their priority is to profitize everything, including healthcare." In caps, "It's 2025 and the wealthiest country in the world denies citizens health care." Yeah. And again, I go back to the point with Maria a moment ago. They're claiming that by fighting for citizens to get health care, it's Democrats are fighting for the illegals because they want to demonize a class of people. It's a double win. You get to demonize them and then you get to go, they're getting something you're not, which really ticks off the stupid. So thank you, Lucy, for that. Danny chimes in, said Republicans have had and still have the power to do away with the 60-vote rule in the Senate at any time. It only takes 51 votes, And they did it many times. Most recent was when they voted in the last three Supreme Court justices. He writes that the Democrats sat in the Senate the other night until midnight, prepared to do business, but no Republicans showed up. He said the Republicans are hell-bent on destroying our democracy. Yeah, that's kind of the point. I guess the positive is they're very upfront about it. They're very willing to say, yeah, we screw those people, or you people, all people, except our donors. They say, may you live in interesting times. Well, welcome. Welcome to interesting times. I hope you have your front row seat. And John sent me this one way out of left field. And I'm not sure, John, where you got this, but okay. He says, quote, you don't mention pain medications. And my mind is like, I know it's bad now. I know all the attacks are harming people's mental health and their job status and their finances, and it's really bad, but pain meds? He goes on, why not? Now you are down on drugs these days. I have a number of painful problems, and the only thing that works is opiates. Okay. He writes, you are down on them, so I have to get some other type of drugs from private sources. He says, I'm not going to drive 40 minutes for 20 minutes of therapy. Well, I wish you would get therapy, and I wish you were closer. There is that. But I don't know where it came from. And like I said, I thought it was pain from the current times, the administration. But I do want to, because I could see that a little bit. But John, I want to clear this up for you. I'm not down on pain meds. If people truly need them, yeah, absolutely. Get the help you need. Get the medicine you need. I was in favor of medicinal pot well before anybody else was. But I don't think it should be handed out like Pez or Doritos, as the one drug company executive wanted. But if you need them, I don't want you searching back alleys for heroin. I don't want you looking on the street for whatever they concoct. So I'm not down on them. I do think you should know what the consequences are up front. And, because the sad reality is I've known people over the years who have been addicted to them, John. And my concern is they didn't know that they were going to be addicted. They didn't know they were going to get hooked on it. And they kept taking more and more and more. And once they got hooked, it wasn't pretty. Not pretty at all. So I hope I cleared that up. But I think I had you gone with the, times are really bad. We need something to dull the pain. I wouldn't agree with you, but I could understand it. I wouldn't condone it, but I would understand it. But I got tons more and I'm out of time. But I want to hear your thoughts, because some of the fascinating responses I've gotten in all this, and oddly enough, none of them are blaming Democrats, because they're on the moral side of the issue. They're on the right side of the issue. And it's one of those things that seems, at least in my estimation, if Republicans truly wanted to keep government open, that this was pretty simple. Guarantee that there is going to be some language to keep some funding for healthcare. Instead of making up lies or doing what Ted Cruz has done and putting out Senator Klobuchar's picture with a sombrero and a mustache, I don't know what kind of childish games, sophomoric games you're playing, but you should have been there at midnight the other night. You should be there fighting, doing what you got to do, but there. Not weird tweeting or texting or socialing or whatever. Get your behind to work. Seems simple to me, because the sad reality is working people are suffering. Shame on all of you. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Something I said got on your nerves, under your skin, made you happy, made you sad, by all means, shoot it at me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast, wherever you get your favorite podcast, you will find ours. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. Israel is preparing for the immediate implementation of the first stage of President Trump's plan for the immediate release of all hostages, says Prime Minister Netanyahu's office. This after Hamas said it agrees to accept some of President Trump's Gaza peace plan. Moshe Lavi is the brother-in-law of a hostage, Omri Miran.
We understand Hamas provided a response that is a yes, but, so not a direct positive response. But at the same time, President Trump seems confident that we have space now to find a resolution to bring home all the remaining 48 hostages.
The Pentagon announcing another U.S. air attack on an alleged drug trafficking boat off the coast of Venezuela. A federal judge in New York sentenced Sean Diddy Combs to 4 years and 2 months in prison and $500,000 fine for two prostitution-related charges. His attorneys say they'll appeal. A winning day and week for Wall Street indexes. This is ABC News. California already.